You have your Bibles. Let me have you turn to Judges chapter 13. Now, we are just about a month away from entering into a season that isn't really an official season, but most of us are aware it is commencement season. Starting in May, people start making their plans for college commencements, and then later in June, at least around here, for high school commencements. And students who've focused their entire life on school are now anticipating this special day. Now, I have to say, as having had two sons that have both commenced, that commencement is really a very, very, very boring event. I just have to be honest. Now, it isn't if you're one of the people graduating. It's something you look forward to and anticipate. But you know, and your chuckles, you understand. You listen to people give boring speeches about the past and the hopes for the future. And then you sit and you listen to hundreds, sometimes thousands of names, depending on who's graduating, where they're graduating from. And that's the event. And yet, because it's that kind of an event, it gives those of us who go to commencements the opportunity to invest our thinking in things that are really important. Like, I wonder if the person most likely to succeed in this class is really going to succeed. And I wonder if the person who is the salutatorian or the valedictorian, if they'll even have a job a year from now or 5 years from now. You know, the reality is, as you see these people process across the stage, one of the things that is really hard for young people to learn is commencement means the beginning. It's not the end. So whether it's high school commencement or college commencement, it is just the start. And some people clearly start better than others, but it's just the start. And some people who start very well have pretty miserable failings. And so it's really a question of what do you do with this start that you have as you start out into the world. And as we talk about that, I want to tell you about a man who he graduated from a high school. I don't even know the name of his high school, but my guess is this man was probably the one that his classmates thought was one of the ones, at least, who was most likely to succeed. When he graduated, he was one of these people who had an awful lot going for him. And his name was Samson. Now, if you're at all familiar with the story of Samson, the one thing you know about him was he was strong. But if you know the story beyond that, you also know that he was really pretty much a failure. And those two things kind of go together, and they're a warning to us as we think about our lives. You see, as Samson went across that commencement stage, I am confident that people thought, there's a guy who's going somewhere. Because if they knew anything about Samson, they knew about his family upbringing, and they knew that he had parents who were really devoted parents. Now, as we read about Samson in chapter 13 of Judges, we aren't really told a lot of specifics about his father, Manoah, and his mother. In fact, I don't think his mother's even given a name in the story. But and so I can't say with absolute certainty that they were great parents. In fact, as you read the story of Samson and you see the kind of person he turned out to be, you kind of wonder about his parents. But I think they did the best that they could, because they were clearly committed to God's plan for them, and that was to raise up a son who would be a deliverer for God's people. And as you read chapter 13, you discover that God had told Manoah and his wife that they had to raise Samson in a unique way as a Nazarite to identify that he was specially called by God. Now, to be a Nazirite was not an easy thing. It meant that you had to go your entire life without ever coming near a corpse, human or animal. It meant that you could never have any fermented drink. It meant that probably the most obvious thing of all was that you could never cut your hair. And I don't know if you've ever thought about what life must have been like for Samson, but he had to be one of the most antisocial kids around. I mean, when grandma and grandpa died and everybody went to the funeral, Samson couldn't be there. When his classmate in high school passed away suddenly and everybody showed up, Samson wasn't there. And when Fluffy the cat died, Samson couldn't help bury it. And of course, just thinking of somebody who had hair that was never cut. I mean, I've heard one preacher joke that he's probably the only kid in the history of the world whose dad didn't tell him, "Go cut your hair, son." It's just the opposite in his case. He couldn't do it. And so these parents had to raise Samson with these restrictions. Now that had to be tough for the average kid. But when you read about Samson and you look into his life and you see the kind of person that he was, there's no question he was a strong-willed child because he was a strong-willed adult. And any of you who've had strong-willed children know that it is not easy to discipline strong-willed children. I came to the conclusion when our oldest son, Carrie, turned about 15 or 16, that parenting had changed forever. Because when our boys were little, just the fact that I was bigger than they were enabled me to tell them things, and they would listen to me. I remember one time our son Carl was probably 4 or 5 years old, and he decided to have a temper tantrum in Sam's Club. I didn't get him something that he wanted. I don't remember exactly. But so he had this hissy fit, and everybody in the store knew about it. And so I just grabbed Carl and carried him out of the store. And it did the job. But imagine that you're Manoah, Samson's father. And at 4 years old, 5 years old, you have a son who could carry you out of the store. I mean, that would not be an easy thing to discipline. And those of you who have wrestled with discipline issues with teenagers, you can imagine that his issues began when he was much younger than a teenager, because he wasn't threatened by his parents at all. And he was strong-willed. Well, all that's to say that I think Manoah and his wife really did the best that they could in raising Samson. At least he got through his adult years with his hair uncut. And it seems to me that there were things that they had managed to impress upon him. But that was just one of the things that Samson had going for him. A second thing that Samson had going for him that would cause you, if you're at that commencement of his high school, to think he's really going places, was his early beginnings. I mean, before he was even born, an angel came to his mother. His mother couldn't have kids, and the angel came and said, "You're going to have a son, and he's going to deliver God's people." I mean, for a barren woman to have a child and have an angel say of this child, "He is destined to be a leader of God's people." I mean, all of that had to be something that I'm sure Manoah and his wife, when they're at those times when they were struggling with Samson having his temper tantrum, saying, "Remember, he's destined for greatness, honey. Remember that." It was something I'm sure that they probably told Samson again and again. "Son, God has great plans for you. He's going to do something awesome through you." And so anyone that knew Samson on the day of his graduation thought, "It's going to be interesting to see what God does now." Well, then, obviously, probably the thing that distinguished Samson above everything else, that would have certainly impressed his classmates, was his physique. Samson was strong. He was one of those star athletes who, you know, when he graduated, he had all of the major colleges promising him a full-ride scholarship and probably to a number of different sports. He could do them all. When I think about Samson, I think he not only could play a front-line position on a college football team, he could be the front line on a college football team. As you read his story, he was phenomenal. In fact, I'm convinced if you had him play defense, he could play any position on defense better than anybody else. Because we know of him as being strong, but when you read of his exploits, you realize he wasn't just strong. He was agile. He was quick. He was phenomenal. And anybody who saw Samson do anything had to be impressed with what a phenomenal person he was physically. As you read the story of Samson, you realize there's never been, certainly not in Israel at the time, but to date, never been anyone like Samson. Just some of the exploits that are talked about in his story are just absolutely amazing. When Samson gets old enough to get married, it's kind of the first evidence that we see that Samson's not fully committed to being the person that his parents want him to be and that God wants him to be, because he has interest in a Philistine young woman who catches his eye. And you find with Samson, by the way, that everything catches his eye. He is very much looking after whatever grabs him, and his lust gets him into all kinds of trouble. But he has an interest in this Philistine woman, decides to take her as a wife, and on his way to his wedding, as he's walking down to his wedding, I guess he was leading the way and his folks were behind him, or he was off in the woods or something, but he was by himself, his folks weren't right with him. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, this lion jumps out. A lesser man probably would have just passed out just to see the sight of this lion, and a normal man would have just been food for the lion in no time at all, but not Samson. Apparently he crouches down, the lion goes over him, he grabs him and just crushes this lion. And that's it. This lion, and he wasn't one of these zoo lions that, kind of lies around all day. This was a real ferocious beast. And Samson just crushes him like he's a kitten, as sad as that would be. No, he was strong. And then there's a time a little bit later on, and again, if you've read through Judges, you already know this, but Samson had he'd done some damage to the Philistines. They were the oppressors of the people at the time. And he headed off to a cave, which I guess he was just trying to get a little rest. But the Philistines gather and they intimidate the rest of the Israelites. They were always oppressing the Israelites. And the Philistines, they had weapons. That was one of the ways they were able to oppress the Israelites, was they had iron weapons and they made sure that the Israelites had none. And so they could always keep the Israelites under their thumb. And they showed up and they told the Israelites, if you don't turn Samson over to us, you're gonna feel it desperately. And so 3,000 of Samson's own men come to him at this cave and they say, Samson, we've got to turn you over to the Philistines. We don't want to do it, but what choice do we have? They're going to oppress us again. And Samson says, It's okay. Here's what I want you to do. I just don't want you to kill me, okay? As long as you guys don't kill me, we'll be fine. He said, I want you to tie me up with ropes. And we're not talking about, this little twine that you use at the post office or yellow nylon rope. So, these are the kind of ropes that you tie up a ship with. And he says, tie me up and give me to the Philistines. And so they do that. And because there are 3,000 Israelites who are ready to turn Samson over, I can't help but think the Philistines have to outnumber them. There had to be 5,000, 10,000. I don't know how many. I don't think it tells us in the account. But there were thousands of them. So here is Samson tied up, and they finally have their man. He was at their disposal. And so they, I assume, come at him, and they're ready. Probably the first guy that takes his head is going to be the one who's going to be the champion in all of the Philistines. And so as they're marching towards him to take their prey, all of a sudden Samson just kind of flexes his muscles, and this ship rope, it says it just broke like charred flax, you know, like a candle wax, just nothing. And all of a sudden Samson is free, but they still have all the weapons. And Samson looks around and he sees there's a donkey that's died fairly recently, but he grabs the donkey and rips out the skull of the donkey, and he uses that for his weapon. And we're told that he takes out 1,000 Philistines with that donkey skull. I mean, talk about strong. 5,000 to 1, perhaps. However many people there were, he took them all down. The ones he didn't take down, they ran off. Samson was a powerful man. Let me just give you one other story. You see Samson's lack of self-control because he goes down, I think it's in chapter 16, the beginning of the chapter, to Gaza, and he spends the night with a prostitute in Gaza. He knew it was wrong, but he didn't care. And Gaza was Philistine territory. He was in the middle of a Philistine city, and he didn't care. But they decided that this was their chance to get him again. Because in the middle of the night, while Samson is with this woman, they close the city gates and they call for reinforcements to come and get Samson. And in a city like Gaza, while Samson could have roamed around the city, once those gates were closed, nobody was getting out. So if they just could bring in enough reinforcements, they had him. I mean, these gates were gates on big walls. They were the kind of walls that you could drive a chariot around the outside, the fortress. And the gates were sometimes the strongest part of that wall because they were made of wood like 6 feet thick, and the post for those gates went down 10 or 15 feet into the ground. Samson, the gates were closed. Samson was trapped. They had him. They were going to get him. But Samson wasn't deterred. He just walked out, apparently just in plain sight, walked up to the gate, just reached out, grabbed that post, and pulled up those gates somehow. And he didn't just, now, if it had been me and I could even have budged it, I would have moved it, you know, just over to the side. But we're told that Samson carried those posts up to the highest hill, which was probably about 28 miles away, just so he could say to the Philistines, "You thought you had me, did you? Well, you didn't." Now, Samson, there was no one ever like him with his strength. And so you think, God definitely had the right guy. Now, clearly, one of the things that's evident as you read the story is this wasn't just all physical strength. It was primarily God's strength. I have no doubt, as you read the whole story, that he was a strong man. Just his body had to demonstrate that. But it wasn't physical strength alone. It was God's strength at work through him. And you think, if God could do that through a man like Samson, they could be delivered from the Philistines. But as you read through the story, you discover that for all that Samson did, It's interesting, the beginning of the story, it says that he will begin to deliver the people from the Philistines. And that's really all he was ever able to do. He had all of the ability that God could have used to totally eradicate the Philistines, but he never lived up to his potential. Why was that? Well, Samson had so much strength. But for Samson, I think his strength was really his greatest weakness. Because he was dependent on his strength. I mean, he knew that he could take out anybody. No one could take Samson on. And so he relied upon his strength. And in the process, even though at times he was given this amazing ability, most of the time he really wasn't very reliant upon God. In fact, you see that as you read the story, that Samson gradually demonstrates that his trust is in himself and not in God. I mean, as early as this story with the lion, with his wedding, if you remember the story back in chapter, I guess it's 14, when he goes to his wedding, as he's making his way to Timnah, he goes back and he checks out this carcass where the lion that he's killed, and he finds in the lion carcass some bees have made a nest, and he's just famished. And so he thinks, oh, that looks so good. It's fresh honey. And he reaches in the carcass and grabs the honey, and it just tastes so good. And I don't know if as he's reaching for the honey or after he's reached for it, somewhere in there he knew, oh yeah, I made a vow. I'm not supposed to touch a carcass. And I can't help but think, because I've felt this way, and I think you have too, in that moment when he was disobeying, he probably thought, okay, now the axe is going to fall, God's going to get me, I'm going to be judged, and nothing happened. And he thought, I guess it doesn't really matter. And he went on his life, and actually, we don't know for sure, but it may well have been at the wedding feast. It was a feast that lasted for 7 days. That certainly a Philistine wedding feast would have been a drunken orgy. And so chances are, knowing what we know about Samson, he probably imbibed in the whole thing. And so he has his drinks, which are wrong because he promised he wouldn't, or his parents promised he wouldn't, and again, nothing happens. And then, having lived much of his life by his own wits and his own strength, he once again finds another woman who captivates him, a woman by the name of Delilah. And in chapter 16, when he meets Delilah, once again, he wants to have her. Just whatever his eyes want, he gets. In fact, Samson really is indicative of the people of the book of Judges. It says in the book that everyone does what is right in their own eyes. It's a repeated refrain several times. And several times, Samson says, it looks good to me. It's good to my eyes, basically. He's living out that dream. And, you know, it's so American, isn't it? Just if you want it, take it. You only go around once in life, so grab for all the gusto. Samson fit that, just as so many of us do. But he was given this gift from God, and instead of trusting in God, he turned from God and trusted in himself. And so when he's there with Delilah, I don't know for sure whether Delilah was a Philistine or an Israeli with loyalties to the Philistines. Either way, she had a Philistine heart because she was ready to sell out to the Philistines. And she's going to sell Samson out. And you know the story, if you've been to Sunday school at all, how she goaded Samson, tried to get him to tell him his secret. Samson, I want to know why. What makes you so strong? Why are you so strong? And so Samson just plays with her. And when she does what he suggests, binding him up with ropes, he just flicks his muscles and he gets out. And then a little bit later, Samson gets a little closer to the source. He said, you know, if you braid my hair, then I'll be as weak as other men. And once again, Goliath says, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. Samson gets up and shakes out his hair, and he's as strong as ever. But the whole time, he's just toying with her. And finally, she just nags him to the point of giving up his secret. And that was a problem of Samson. He was nagged by his wife, and he was nagged by this woman, Delilah. And between his lust for women and his inability to say no when they nagged him, Samson was toast. Because he gives it all up. He says, no, if you cut my hair, then I will be just like every other man. And she lures him to sleep and cuts his hair, and that's it. She says, Samson, the Philistines are here. And Samson gets up and he's ready to fight them. And they subdue him because he's lost his strength. And at the end of the story of Samson, it's a pathetic story. This strong man who started out with so much potential, once they grabbed him, they are so angry with him, they gouge out his eyes. And they bind him up, and they put him, force him to grind grain, which gives you a sense that he still had strength. He was stronger than most men, but he didn't have this supernatural strength from God anymore. And so they had him grinding grain as a blind man. But they weren't quite through with him because he had done so much damage to them. They decided that they were going to really make sport of him. So they had this great feast to their god Dagon. And they bring Samson in. And they tie him up between two pillars in the middle of this temple. And there's like thousands of people there at this temple to celebrate their defeat of Samson and the superiority of their god. And here is this strong man who should have been victorious, and yet he's totally defeated. Blind and weak. His hair is kind of in tufts, probably. Just, we were told it's starting to grow back. It's a pathetic picture. And yet, the story really has its beginning at the end. Because it's at Samson's greatest point of weakness that he finally begins to learn his strength. It's at the end of his life that he finally does what he should have done at the beginning of his life. Because at the end of his life, when he is incapable of doing what he wants to do, which is to get vengeance on the Philistines, that's when he cries out to God. And he asks for God for the strength just one last time to take it to the Philistines. It was at his point of greatest weakness that he finally learned to rely upon God's strength. And so often, we live our lives, and in our strength, we find that our financial strength, our physical health, our status, whatever it is, we live by that. And we don't need God very much, and we experience just what Samson did, only maybe don't realize it. That by trusting in our strengths, we don't learn to trust in God. Sometimes it's at that point where we get to the point where we have no choice but to trust in God, that we see God is faithful. Remember the story over in the New Testament when the Apostle Paul was afflicted with some sort of affliction, we don't know what it was, and he said, I asked God, I think it was three different times, to take this away from me. And you know what God said? No, Paul. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. Samson had to learn the hard way that his strength, trusting in his strength, led to his greatest downfall, and trusting in God's strength led to his greatest victory. Because if you know the story, and you probably all do, you know that Samson realized when he was in that temple that he was tied to these two pillars in this temple. And he realized that everything in this temple was being held up by these pillars. And I don't know if he pushed or he pulled, but in God's strength, the pillars fell, the temple collapsed. Samson was killed, and 3,000 Philistines died. We're told that more people died in Samson's death than throughout his life. His greatest strength came at his point of deepest weakness when he realized his need of God. Now, let me just mention one other thing in passing before I wrap this up. It is interesting to me, and Sue and I talked about this when we were reading through Judges. You wonder how we know. In Judges chapter 16, we have Samson's prayer. He says in verse 28, Samson prayed to Judges 16, Samson prayed to the Lord, "O sovereign Lord, remember me. Please strengthen me just once more. And let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." There are a couple things that kind of are strange to me about that. One is I would really, really, really have appreciated it if Samson hadn't prayed another one of those, "I want this for vengeance on me, for me." You know what? It bugged me that Samson didn't die saying, "You know, God, your name has been blasphemed because of all this, and I want to get your name honored, and for that I'm praying." Now, at the very end, even at the very end, Samson is still a self-centered bum. But he trusted God. I mean, it's not because he was such a wonderful person. It's just because he cried out to God. The other thing that I find kind of puzzling is if Samson was in the middle of this temple and he pushed apart these pillars and he and 3,000 people are crushed in the rubble, then who was there to tell the story of his prayer? We don't know. I mean, you know, we know he was led there by a servant. Maybe the servant heard his prayer and said, "You know, this is a good time for me to go outside." We really don't know. Or maybe, in God's sovereignty, he just made sure that we knew what Samson had prayed. But you know, as a pastor, I know, because I have officiated at funerals of people. I had no idea, and to this day have no idea, what happened to them on their deathbeds. I would not have guessed that Samson would have changed his mind at the end. But he did. And there's an element of hope in that. But the bottom line is it wasn't about Samson's strength. His strength really led to his downfall. It was at his greatest point of weakness that he finally had his greatest victory. And that's what we need to learn. The self-sufficient, relatively well-off people that we are, learning to trust God can be one of the hardest things we do. And yet, it is when we do that that we can really see God do great things through us.